There are some forms of insanity which, driven to an ultimate expression, can become the new models of sanity. Busab Manuel.
McKee?
It was the familiar Caliban presence in his awareness, as though he heard and felt someone or something which he knew was not there. The preparation had been deceptively simple. He and Jedrick clasped hands, his right hand and her left, and each grated one of the shimmering rods with the other hand. McKee did not have a ready identity for this Caliban and wondered at the questioning in her voice. He agreed, however, that he was indeed McKee, shaping the thought as sub-vocalized conversation. As he spoke, McKee was acutely aware of Jedrick beside him. She was more than just another person now. He carried a tentative simulation model of her, sometimes anticipating her responses. "You make mutual agreement?" the Caliban asked. McKee sensed Petrarchy then, a distant presence, the monitor for this experience. It was as though Petrarchy had been reduced to a schematic which the Caliban followed, a set of complex rules, many of which could not be translated into words. Some part of McKee responded to this as though a monster awakened within him, a sleeping monster who sat up full of anger at being aroused thus, demanding, "Who is it that dares awaken me?" McKee felt his body trembling, felt Jedrick trembling beside him. The Caliban to Prisia trembling, the sweaty response to trance. He saw these phenomena now in a different light. "When you walked at the edge of this abyss." While these thoughts passed through his mind, he felt a slight shift, no more than the blurred reflection of something which was not quite movement. Now, while he still felt his own flesh around him, he also felt himself possessed of an inner contact with Jedrick's body, and knew she shared this experience. Such a panic as he had not thought possible threatened to overwhelm him. He felt Jedrick trying to break the contact, to stop this hideous sharing, but they were powerless in the grip of a force which would not be stopped. No time sense attached itself to this experience, but a fatalistic calm overcame them almost simultaneously. McKee felt awareness of Jedrick, flesh, deepen. Curiosity dominated him now.
"So this is woman. This is man."
They shared the thoughts across an indistinct bridge. Fascination gripped McKee. He probed deeper. He, she, could feel himself, herself breathing.
And the differences?
It was not the genitalia, the presence or lack of breasts. She felt bereft of breasts. He felt acutely distressed by their presence, self-consciously aware of profound implications. The sense of difference went back beyond gamete, McKee, Jedrick. McKee sensed her thoughts, her reactions. Jedrick.
"You cast your sperm upon the stream of time."
McKee.
"You enclose and nurture."
"I cast.
I nurture."
It was as though they looked at an object from opposite sides, aware belatedly that they both examined the same thing.
"We cast.
We nurture."
Obscuring layers folded away, and McKee found himself in Jedrick's mind, she in his. Their thoughts were one entity. The separate dosadi and consentient experiences melted into a single relationship.
"Erich. Ah, yes. You see?
And your panspechy friend, Bildoon. Note that. You suspected, but now you know." Each set of experiences fed on the other, expanding, refining, condensing, discarding, creating.
"So that's the training of a legum. Loving parents. Oh, yes. Loving parents."
We will apply pressure there, and there. They must be maneuvered into choosing that one as a judge. Yes, that will give us the required leverage. Let them break their own code." And the awakened monster stirred within them.
It had no dimension, no place, only existence. They felt its power. I do what I do. The power enveloped them. No other awareness was permitted. They sensed a primal current, unswerving purpose, a force which could override any other thing in their universe. It was not God, not life, not any particular species. It was something so far beyond such articulations that Jedrick McKee could not even contemplate it without a sense that the next instant would bring obliteration. They felt a question hurled at their united, fearful awareness. The question was framed squarely in anger, astonishment, cold amusement, and threat. For this, you awaken me. Now, they understood why the old body and donor ego had always been slain immediately. This terrible sharing made a noise. It awakened a questioner. They understood the question without words, knowing they could never grasp the full meaning and emotive thrust, that it would burn them out even to try. Anger, astonishment, cold amusement, threat. The question, as their own united minds interpreted it, represented a limit. It was all that Jedrick McKee could accept. The intrusive questioner receded. They were never quite sure afterward whether they'd been expelled or whether they'd fled in terror, but the parting words were burned into their combined awareness. Let the sleeper sleep. They walked softly in their minds then. They understood the warning, but knew it could never be translated in its fullest threat for any other sentient being. Concurrent, McKee, Jedrick, felt a projection of terror from the god wall Caliban, unfocused, unexplained. It was a new experience in the male-female collective memory. Caliban Fannie Mae had not even projected this upon original McKee when she'd thought herself doomed. Concurrent, McKee, Jedrick felt a burnt-out fading from Pacharki. Something in that terrible contact had plunged Pacharki into his death spiral. Even as McKee, Jedrick realized this, the old Gowichan died. It was a slammed door. But this came after a blazing realization by McKee, Jedrick, that Pacharki had shared the original decision to set up the Dosadi experiment. McKee found himself clothed in living, breathing flesh, which routed its messages through his awareness. He wasn't sure which of their two bodies he possessed, but it was distinct, separate. It wrapped him in human senses. The taste of salt, the smell of perspiration, and the omnipresent Warren stink. One hand held cold metal, the other clasped the hand of a fellow human. Perspiration drenched this body, made the clasped hands slippery. He felt that knowing which hand held another hand was of utmost importance, but he wasn't ready to face that knowledge. Awareness of self, this new self, and a whole lifetime of new memories demanded all of the attention he could muster. Focus. A Rim City, never outside Jedrick's control because she had fed the signals through to Gar and Tria with exquisite care, and because those who gave the orders on the Rim had shared in the generations of selective breeding which had produced Jedrick. She was a biological weapon whose sole target was the God Wall. Focus. Loving parents can thrust their child into deadly peril when they know everything possible has been done to prepare that child for survival. The oddity to McKee was that he felt such things as personal memories. I did that. Jedrick suffered the throes of similar experiences. Which body? So that was the training of a BUSAB agent. Clever. Almost adequate. Complex and full of much that she found to be new, but why did it always stop short of a full development? She reviewed the sessions with Erich and Selang. A matched pair. The choice of Selang and the role chosen for her appeared obvious. How innocent. Jedrick felt herself free to pity Selang. When allowed to run its course, this was an interesting emotion. She had never before felt pity in uncolored purity. Focus. McKee actually loved her. She savored this emotion in its consentient complexity. The straight flow of selected emotions fascinated her. They did not have to be bridled. In and out of this creative exchange there wove an intimacy, a pure sexuality without inhibitions. McKee, savoring the amusement Jedrick had felt when Tria had suggested a McKee-Jedrick breeding, found himself caught by demanding male eroticism and knew by the sensation that he retained his old body. Jedrick, understanding McKee's long search for a female to complete him, found her amusement converted to the desire to demonstrate that completion. As she turned toward him, releasing the dull rod which had once shimmered in contact with Pecharki, she found herself in McKee's flesh, looking into her own eyes. McKee gasped in the mirror experience. Just as abruptly, driven by shock, they shifted back into familiar flesh. McKee, male. Jedrick, female. Instantly, it became a thing to explore. Back and forth. Eroticism was forgotten in this new game. We can be either sex, body, at will. It was something beyond Tepriciots and Calibans, far more subtle than the crawling progression of a panspecie ego through the bodies from its creche. They knew the source of this odd gift, even as they sank back on the bed, content to be familiar male and female for a time. The sleeping monster. This was a gift with barbs in it, something loving parents might give their child in the knowledge that it was time for this lesson. Yet they felt revitalized, knowing they had for an instant tapped an energy source without limits. A pounding on the door interrupted this shared reverie. Jedrick! Jedrick! What is it? It's Broey. He wishes to talk to McKee. They were off the bed in an instant. Jedrick glanced at McKee, knowing she had not one secret from him, that they shared a reasoning base. Out of the mutual understanding in this base, she spoke for both of them. Does he say why? Jedrick! They both recognized the voice of a trusted aide and heard the fear in it. It's mid-morning, and there is no sun. God has turned off the sun, sealed us in, to conceal the final blast. Jedrick opened the door, confronted the frightened aide. Where is Broey? Here, in your command post. He came alone, without escort. She glanced at McKee. You will speak for us. Broey waited near the position board in the command post. Watchful humans stood within striking distance. He turned as McKee and Jedrick entered. McKee noted that the Gowichan's body was indeed heavy with breeding juices as anticipated. Unsettling for a Gowichan.
What are your terms, McKee?
Broey's voice was guttural, full of heavy breathing. McKee's features remained dosadi bland, but he thought, Broey thinks I'm responsible for the darkness. He's terrified. McKee glanced at the threatening black of the windows before speaking. He knew this Gowichan from Jedrick's painstaking study. Broey was a sophisticate, a collector of sophistication who surrounded himself with people of the same stripe. He was a professional sophisticate who read everything through that peculiar dosadi screen. No one could come into his circle who didn't share this pose. All else remained outside and inferior. He was an ultimate dosadi, a distillation, almost as human as Gowichan, because he'd obviously once worn a human body. He was Gowichan at his origins, though. No doubt of it. You followed my scent, McKee said. Excellent. Broey brightened. He had not expected a dosadi exchange, paired to the non-emotional essentials. Unfortunately, McKee said, you have no position from which to negotiate. Certain things will be done. You will comply willingly. Your compliance will be forced, or we will act without you. It was a deliberate goading on McKee's part, a choice of non-Dosadi forms to abbreviate this confrontation. It said more than anything else that McKee came from beyond the God Wall, that the darkness which held back the daylight was the least of his resources. Broey hesitated. Then, "So?" The single word fell on the air with countless implications. An entire exchange discarded, hopes dashed, a hint of sadness at lost powers, and still with that sophisticated reserve which was Broey's signature. It was more subtle than a shrug, more powerful in its Dosadi overtones than an entire negotiating session. "Questions?" McKee asked. Broey glanced at Jedrick, obviously surprised by this. It was as though he appealed to her. They were both Dosadi, were they not? This outsider came here with his gross manners, his lack of Dosadi understanding. How could one speak to such one? He addressed Jedrick. "Have I not already stated my submission? I came alone." Jedrick picked up McKee's cue. "There are certain peculiarities to our situation."
"Peculiarities?"
Broey's nictitating membrane blinked once. Jedrick allowed her manner to convey a slight embarrassment. "Certain delicacies of the Dosadi condition must be overlooked. We are now, all of us, abject supplicants, and we are dealing with people who do not speak as we speak, act as we act."
"Yes," he pointed upward. "The mentally retarded ones." "We are in danger, then."
It was not a question. Broey peered upward, as though trying to see through the ceiling and intervening floors. He drew in a deep breath.
"Yes."
Again, it was compressed communication. Anyone who could put the God Wall there could crush an entire planet. Therefore, Dosadi and all of its inhabitants had been brought to a common subjection. Only a Dosadi could have accepted it this quickly without more questions. And Broey was an ultimate Dosadi. McKee turned to Jedrick. When he spoke, she anticipated every word, but she waited him out. "Tell your people to stop all attacks." He faced Broey. "And your people." Broey looked from Jedrick to McKee, back to Jedrick with a puzzled expression openly on his face. But he obeyed.
"Which communicator?"